You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 99, by Rudolf Steiner, 14 lectures, entitled Rosicrucian Wisdom, translated by Johanna Collis. This is Lecture 11, given in Munich on the 4th of June, 1907, entitled The Evolution of Humanity on the Earth, Part 1. We have come in our studies to the point where Earth has passed through what we termed the moon stage. We have also seen that a kind of sleep state of the whole system followed the moon stage of Earth. One must, of course, realize that all the beings who inhabit the planet share these transitional, intermediate states with it. During this time, they pass through experiences differing from those of the external state of evolution. We will try to be clear as to how the beings have undergone various things in the transition between the moon stage of Earth and the actual Earth evolution. We saw the three kinds of being lived on moon, physical forebears, so to say, of our present nature kingdoms. There existed a kind of plant mineral, animal plant, and human animal. Human beings, as such, on this old moon, had not yet developed ego consciousness. So far, human beings had not attained to an I, an ego, dwelling within a body. During this transitional period, something very important came about in the spiritual part of the human being, if I may use this term. If we form a true picture of the old moon sphere, we could describe it as a being which itself possessed a sort of life, somewhat like a tree, upon which all manner of living things exist. Moon itself was a kind of homogeneous plant mineral. Its rocks were only a hardening of the plant mineral mass, and its animal plants grew out of the mass, while what we can call the human animals circled round moon. We must at the same time be clear that ego consciousness still lived more or less in the atmosphere of moon, in the fire mist, that it was still a part, a member, of a higher being, in whom existed all the egos which today are to be found in bodies separated by the skin one from another. As yet there were no human beings going about as they do today, equipped with ego consciousness. On the other hand, however, something else was much more fully developed than on the earth. You know that what is called folk soul, race soul, has become a somewhat abstract idea today. The individual soul of the human being that dwells in his body is considered by many today to be the actual reality. If one speaks of German, French, Russian, Asian souls, people look on that as more or less an abstraction, as a comprehensive concept, embracing the characteristics which the individual members of those nations possess. To the spiritual researcher, this is not so at all. What one calls the folk soul, the German, French, Russian folk soul, is to him an absolutely independent entity. It is only that in our present earth existence, the folk soul is a purely spiritual being, perceptible only to one who can ascend to the astral plane. There you could not deny it, for there it is present as an actual living being. You would encounter the folk soul there, as on the physical plane you encounter your friends. On moon it would have occurred to you even less to deny this group soul, for at that time it had a still more real existence. It was the folk soul, the race soul, which guided the bloodstream down into the bodies, into those beings which circled round moon. It is the destiny of our age to deny the existence of such beings who live their real life on the astral plane and are not perceptible here on the physical plane. We are at the very height of this materialistic development, which prefers to deny such beings as folk souls and race souls. Recently, a very characteristic book has appeared, which has been much advertised. It is a book that has been praised and is considered, quite rightly, to be a true expression of our abstract, objective thinking, since it comes from the depths of the modern human soul. Such a book had to be written sooner or later. It denies everything that cannot be seen with the eyes or felt with the hands. It is a scandalous book from the standpoint of the spiritual researcher. A notable book, however, from the standpoint of present-day methods of thought. I refer to Mautner's title, Critique of Language. In this book, a clean sweep is made of everything that cannot be grasped by the hand. Our age had to produce such a book as a kind of necessity. This is not meant as a criticism. It is only to point out the contrast between the esoteric mode of thought and the present time. You can find in it the exact opposite of all esoteric methods of thought. It is the most amazing product of a dying cultural stream of the present day, and from this point of view it is quite excellent. You will understand that on Old Moon a more common consciousness prevailed than here on Earth. On the Earth human beings feel themselves to be individuals. On Moon this was not the case. On Moon the group soul was active, which then appeared on the Earth in a more attenuated form as the folk soul. Hence the whole Moon globe had a common consciousness in a high degree. This common consciousness on Moon felt itself to be feminine, and you know that Moon was irradiated by Sun, and Sun was experienced as masculine. This is preserved in old Egyptian myths. For instance, the feminine Moon, Isis, and the masculine Sun, Osiris. An ego consciousness enclosed in the human body was, however, altogether lacking. That was contained in the moon atmosphere. During the intermediate state between moon and earth, various beings worked in from the atmosphere of moon and made the human ether body and astral body ready to possess an ego consciousness. What happened when Sun again shone forth, still containing Moon and Earth within it? In the environment of this now newly awakened Sun globe were the beings who today form your souls, and during the intermediate stage, they had incorporated ego consciousness into their astral and ether bodies. As yet, the physical body did not possess it, and indeed it once again emerged as the human animal it had been on Moon. Thus these two parts were no longer in harmony. On Moon they had still harmonized, but what had now descended into the astral and ether bodies was no longer quite in harmony with what existed below as physical body. And the consequence of this was that before a harmony could arise, the earlier states of Saturn, Sun, and Moon had to be recapitulated. Thus we have three recapitulations before our actual Earth could appear. First, the Saturn existence came forth with the physical bodies of the animal humans, although in a certain respect no longer as simple as they had been on old Saturn. At that time, the sense organs had existed as rudimentary beginnings. Now the glandular and nerve organs were present in addition, but they were incapable of taking in what was above. A short recapitulation of Saturn existence had to take place. The spirits of egohood and independence had to work once more on the physical bodies in order to implant in them the power of taking up the ego. In the same way, the Sun state had to be passed through, so that these physical bodies, in respect of the organs formed on Sun, could become capable of receiving an ego. And in the same way, the Moon condition was repeated in order to make the nervous system fitted for it. Thus there was first a kind of repetition of the Saturn stage. In this, the beings who had earlier been animal humans now moved about on Earth like automata, or a kind of machine. Then began the time when this repeated Saturn condition, went over into the Sun condition. There these human bodies were like sleeping plants. Next came the repetition of the Moon state, where Sun had already extricated itself. Everything remained behind that had earlier already detached itself as Moon. So once again the whole Moon cycle was repeated, except that now the capacity to receive an ego was implanted into the beings. This repetition of the Moon cycle was, for Earth, if one may say so, an evil period of its evolution, for considered spiritually, egohood had been implanted into the human being, consisting of physical body, ether body, and astral body, but without the purifying power of thought. During the time when Sun had already withdrawn, and Earth had not yet cast out the Moon, the human being was in a state in which his astral body was the bearer of the most savage lusts. For every bad force was implanted in him, and there was no counterbalance. After the separation of Sun, there was, to put it in today's language, a globe in which human beings were still entirely group souls, but of the most sensual order, and with the worst instincts. During this passage through a veritable hell, and under the influence of the departed pure Sun forces, not only of the physical Sun, but also of Sun beings, who had withdrawn to the Sun, the recapitulating Moon gradually matured so far that it could throw out the terrible instincts and powers, and retain, on the Earth, whatever was capable of evolving. With the departure of the present Moon, all those sensual forces went away. Therefore, in the present Moon you have the remains, also in its spiritual significance, of all the evil influences which were at that time present in the human realm, and therefore, too, the Moon is looked upon as having a detrimental influence. Everything capable of evolution remained on the Earth after the separation of the Sun and Moon. Let us consider first the animal humans themselves. They had gradually matured far enough for the ego to be incorporated. So we now have, moving about on the earth, human beings who consisted of four members, physical body, ether body, astral body, and ego. For the first time, the former swimming, floating position changed, and they began gradually to achieve an upright posture. The spine and spinal cord became vertical, in contrast to the completely horizontal position they had maintained during the Moon period. And with this rise into an upright position came the widening out of the spinal cord into the brain. Yet another development also ran parallel with this. For the floating, swimming motion which human beings had, both in the Moon period and during the repetition of that period, when the fire mist forces were still present in the environment, they needed a kind of buoyancy bladder, and this was actually part of their composition, as is the case with fish of the present day. But now the fire mist, we called it ruach, was precipitated out. This took place quite gradually and slowly. The air, to be sure, was still filled with thick vapor, but the worst was precipitated. And with this began the time when the human being changed from being a gill breather to a lung breather. The buoyancy bladder was transformed into lungs. Through this, human beings became capable of receiving into themselves the higher spiritual entities, namely the first rudiments of what is higher than the ego, the spirit self, or manas. This metamorphosis of the buoyancy bladder into the lungs is expressed in the Bible in the wonderful monumental words, quote, "And God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul," close quote. This expresses what had been taking place in the human being over thousands of years. All the beings that we have come to know, the plant animals as well as the animal humans of Moon, and their descendants during the Moon period of the Earth, all of them still lacked red blood. What they possessed resembled the blood of present-day lower animals, which is not yet red. Blood-like substance flowed in and out of them from outside. In order to be able to harbor the red blood in themselves, something else was necessary. We shall understand this when we know that until the casting out of the moon in the evolution of our planet, no part had been played by iron. Until then, there had been no iron on our planet. It received it when the planet Mars passed through our Earth, and so to say, left iron behind. Hence the influence of iron in the red blood stems from Mars. Legend has preserved this well by ascribing to Mars the qualities which iron brought to the blood, strong and warlike powers. Thus the influence which came in then, with the change in the breathing process, was supported by the introduction of iron into our organism. This was of the utmost importance in our terrestrial evolution. Under these influences, the human organism became more complete. You could say that through the ego, the human being began to purify and refine the bodies which he had earlier received on Saturn, Sun, and Moon. He began to work first, of course, on the body that had been last received, the astral body. And this purification of the astral body constitutes our present culture and civilization. If you could observe that human being, still in process of transformation toward lungs and taking the first steps toward the development of red blood, you would find him very unlike the present human form. He was so different that one really hesitates to describe him at that period, for it would appear grotesque to present-day materialistic thinkers. The human being had more or less developed into an amphibian, a reptile, which was just beginning to breathe with lungs, and from the former floating, swimming motion, was learning little by little to raise and support himself on the earth. If we say that human beings in the Lemurian epoch moved in a way that alternated between a hop, scarcely to be called a step, and then a short flight in the air, we have the nearest approach to some memory of it in the old dinosaurs. Nothing remains to be discovered by the geologist as solidifications or fossils, for the human body was quite soft, and it contained as yet no kind of bony structure. How did the Earth appear, after having freed itself from the moon? It had formerly been surrounded by fire mists, as in a seething, steaming cauldron, and then by degrees the dense watery vapors withdrew. The Earth was now covered by a very thin, hardened crust, beneath which lay a bubbling, churning sea of fire, the remains of the fire mist of the former atmosphere. Then gradually tiny islands emerged, the first beginnings of our present mineral kingdom. Whereas on Moon a plant-mineral kingdom had still existed, there now appeared the earliest foundations of our modern rocks and stones, in consequence of the hardening, mineralizing of this mass. The animal-plant kingdom had also previously developed, more or less, into our present plant kingdom. And the beings on Moon, who were animal humans, had divided into two groups, one of which had kept pace with evolution and taken on human form. But there were some who had not advanced with evolution. These were the present higher animals. They had stayed behind at an earlier level, and since they could not share in the advance, they fell back more and more. All our present mammals are relics of the moon animal humans who stopped evolving. You must therefore never imagine that the human being was ever an animal such as those existing on the earth today. The bodies of these animals were not at that time capable of receiving the I, the ego. They had remained with the group soul of Moon. The last of these, which had almost managed to keep up and reach the earth stage, but which nevertheless, later on, proved too weak to be the vehicle of an individual soul, are the apes, the present ape species. They too, however, were never actual ancestors of humanity, but beings which had degenerated. In the Lemurian age, the earth was a kind of fiery mass, in which the modern mineral element was for the most part liquefied and fluid, like iron in an iron foundry today. And out of this developed the first mineral island mass. Upon this there moved, half hopping, half hovering, the forefathers of the human being. The spirit self endeavored little by little to gain possession of these human beings. We must picture the ancient fiery period of the earth as a time in which a last echo still lingered of the forces of moon, which then gradually disappeared. They were manifested in the mastery which the human will possessed over the substances and forces of nature. On moon, of course, human beings had still been fully united with nature, and the group soul had molded the conditions of human existence. That was now no longer the case, but a magical connection between the human will and the forces of fire still continued. If a human being had a mild character, then through the will, he acted on the natural element of fire in a calming manner, and in this way more land could be deposited. A passionate human being, on the other hand, worked with his will magically in such a way that the fire masses became fierce and turbulent and tore open the thin earth crust. Once again, the whole savage, passionate power that had been peculiar to human beings on moon, and during the repetition of the moon period on the earth, burst forth in the newly arisen individual human souls. The passions had such an effect on the fiery masses that they became ungovernable. A great part of the land on which the Lemurians dwelt was destroyed, and only a small number of the inhabitants of Lemuria were preserved and could continue the human race. All of you were living in those times. Your souls are the very ones which saved themselves from the raging fiery mass of Lemuria. The portion of humanity that saved itself migrated into the land we know as Atlantis, the main part of which stretches between the present Europe and America. From there the human race multiplied and spread. Gradually the earth's atmosphere had so changed that every trace of the old Ruach had gone, and the air was only saturated by dense masses of vapor. Germanic legend has preserved the memory of this in Niflheim, or Nibelheim, a land permanently filled with similar heavy clouds of mist. What had been working in from outside during the Lemurian age? At first, in Saturn, it was the beings whom we call the spirits of egoism, of the sense of independence. During Sun, it was the archangels, the fire spirits. And during Moon, those beings that were, so to speak, the good spirits of the moon time, for which the Christian designation is angel, and which are called in Theosophy spirits of twilight. We have designated the outstanding leader of these spirits as the Holy Spirit or Holy Ghost, the ruler of the fire spirits as the Christ, and of Saturn the Father God. Thus the last who had been at work with his hosts was the spirit named in Christianity the Holy Spirit, the ruler of the moon evolution, the spirit who was still present during the earth's repetition of the moon period. It was the same spirit who had formed the human being from without, and who now sent a ray of his own essence, so to say, into the human being. We have to distinguish two kinds of spirit in the beginning of the Lemurian age: the spirits who prepare the lower bodily nature, who implant ego consciousness, who fashion the members of the human being, and that spirit who actually entered into human beings at the moment they learned to breathe physically. If you consider that everything which on Saturn formed a kind of fiery mass, surrounded by a finer atmosphere, was gaseous on Sun, and then on Moon was surrounded by those masses of fire mist, then you must regard the evolutionary process of Earth as one of purification, in the same way that the evolution of humanity itself is a purifying process. What one calls air today only gradually became free of all that filled it with a kind of steam and smoke. We must be clear that what separated itself out from the atmosphere are the substances from which all bodies have built themselves up. The air is the purest of what has remained behind. It is the best corporeal medium for the guiding spirits of Moon, whom one calls angels in Christian terminology. Therefore, in the purified air, in the air which had been refined, human beings felt the bodily nature of the new guiding spirits of the earth, the spirit who now was the leader, Jehovah. In the stirring of the wind, human beings experienced what it was that led and guided the earth. Thus they lived on into Atlantean times, on the continent that forms the present bed of the Atlantic Ocean, sensing in the breath which they drew the bodily nature of God. The magical influence which human beings had had upon the fire ocean, upon the processes of the earth, gradually disappeared. But in the early Atlantean age, another connection remained instead. Human beings still possessed a degree of magical power over the growth of plants. If they held their hand, which at that time had quite a different shape, above a plant, they were able to make it grow more quickly through the influence of their will. They were still intimately related with the beings of nature. The whole life of the Atlanteans was in accordance with nature. What we call the intelligence, the ability to think logically, to put two and two together, did not yet exist. On the other hand, human beings had developed other capacities to a high degree, memory, for instance. Today we can scarcely imagine the fabulous degree of development this had attained. They could not calculate, not even that 2 times 2 makes 4, but they knew the answer from memory. On each occasion they remembered the previous experience. Another aspect lingering into Atlantean times was that although human beings no longer felt the forecastle directly within them, as on Moon, they did experience the influence of the old folk souls, race souls. This influence was so strong that it would have been quite impossible in those times for anyone who belonged to one race or folk soul ever to unite with one who belonged to another race. There was a deep antipathy between the peoples of the various folk souls. Love only existed between those belonging to the same one. We may say that the common blood, which earlier in the Moon period had been poured down from the folk soul, was the basis of this kinship. Human beings remembered, not only in some dim way, but quite clearly, the experiences of their forefathers. They felt themselves linked by their common blood in the chain of ancestry, just as you feel your hand to be an item belonging to your organism. This feeling of kinship was a part of evolution, inasmuch as in the transitionary period we have been considering, which took place when the sun withdrew and the moon was cast out, another important event took place. It is connected with all that was proceeding on the earth as a sort of hardening process. The mineral kingdom appeared, and at the same time a similar hardening also took place in the interior of human nature. Something more solid formed itself by degrees out of the soft mass, and hardened first to cartilage and then to bone. Not until the skeletal structure was formed did the walking movement of human beings begin. Another process ran parallel with the shaping of the skeleton. In consequence of the advance of human evolution brought about by the casting out of the moon, and the retention only of what was able to develop, two different forces arose in the beings inhabiting the earth. Both the sun and the moon were now outside, and their influence affected the earth from without. From this intermingling of the sun forces and the moon forces, which had previously been in the body of the earth but now streamed in from without, sexual life made its appearance. All the forces connected with sexuality come under the influence of the sun and moon forces. From this point of view, the still united sun, moon, and earth of ancient times could be looked on as female, and this was fructified, so to say, by the forces of the sun itself. The sun experienced itself as male, the moon as female. Now the moon withdrew, and the forces of both mingled. In a general way, we can describe all the beings that arose up to the departure of the moon as being of a female nature, for all the fructifying forces came from without, from the sun force. Only upon an earth which had cast out the moon, so that the sun shone upon quite a different cosmic body, could the former undifferentiated female divide into male and female. Along with the solidifying, bone-forming process, therefore, the differentiation into sexes took place. Thus the possibility of perfecting the ego in the right way came about. The end of Lecture 11.